Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Jillian Ward, senior reporter with New Project Media. We have Mark Gabriel with us today, president and CEO of United Power, a cooperative in Colorado. Welcome to the program, Mark.
It's great to be here.
We're here to discuss the ongoing transmission challenges out west and how Mark's cooperative is tackling immediate needs in Colorado. So to start us off, can you tell us about the transmission situation out west and how it is compared to the rest of the U.S.? And also, with SunZia being built, how will that help with fill the western transmission gap?
Well, again, thanks for having me here. Having been involved in the transmission business for a number of years, you recall I ran the Western Area Power Administration, one of the largest transmission grids in the West. It's something that I've looked at intently for more than a decade. The rest of the United States has a much more involved transmission system. By that, I mean many more transmission alternatives. The West has got a number of lines, many of which right now are running from coal plants and other places. And so we end up in this interesting situation, in particular where renewable energy projects are being built, that the transmission may not necessarily go where it needs to go. And as folks look at other renewable options in particular, and certainly that holds true for gas, there is a lack of transmission. Now, we've known that in the West for, again, more than a decade. Many projects like SunZia have been going on for more than a decade. In fact, during my time running WAPA, that SunZia was one of the projects. The same thing holds true for Transwest Express. There is a transmission gap. The issue with transmission is twofold. One is it takes a long time to build. The second is right now there's a limited number of offtake agreements. And my belief is the key to transmission in the West is to get guaranteed offtake. And right now that's a bit of a challenge.
And why is that a challenge?
Well, you know, transmission is not a field of dreams. You can't build it and then they will come. In fact, you need offtake agreements to make sure that the financing for the projects can occur. Lacking those offtake agreements, and when I talk about that, we're looking at, you know, 30 and 40 year contracts. Lacking those offtake agreements is very difficult for projects to get funded and therefore supported. There's plenty of money for transmission, let's be clear. And yes, permitting takes a long time, but really, having a customer, so to speak, at the end of the line is a critical component that is very often missing in many of these projects.
Thank you. And out west, there isn't an RTO or an ISO. Really, the closest that we have is CAISO out in California. And so is the lack of an RTO helping move transmission projects forward faster because there isn't as much of a backlog? Can you speak on this?
Well, I'm not sure that the RTO itself is either speeding up or slowing down, a lack of an RTO, speeding up or slowing down transmission. In fact, here in Colorado, you know, Xcel Energy, working within the state of Colorado, was able to execute a project that's going to be built shortly, and we're very excited about that at United Power. I don't think it's a question of the RTO. Again, I truly believe it is the idea of making sure there's a customer at the end of the line to guarantee payment for the transmission line. There's at least 8 or 9 major transmission projects that have been slowly bubbling up across the West. And I don't think it's a question about an RTO. I think it's more a question, how do you get people to commit the offtake of power, which in effect then stimulates the speed of the project? In my time at WAPA, for example, we worked on what's known as the Estes Park Flatiron project. And short line, but it's taken roughly 11 years for that project to come to fruition. It is a time sink for transmission, sadly.
I know that some utilities like Xcel are requiring projects that are bid into RFPs to have entered the interconnection queue so that projects are ready when they're needed. Is that something United Power is looking at doing as well?
Well, again, our goal at United Power, we run a distribution utility, distribution cooperative, and I think one of the best in the country. And our focus really is on serving our members locally. Now, that said, We are contracting for power because, as many people know, May 1 of 2024, we're leaving our current power supplier. In fact, have contracts with 9 power suppliers going forward. And that will continue as we go into the future, very, very critically, because we are growing so quickly and we will need more power suppliers. Certainly, those companies that are going to provide us generation will need to be sure to be in that queue. And we will help them any way we possibly can.
United Power has plans to focus on a hyper-localization model. Can you tell me about what this is and where have you seen this done before?
Well, it really came from kind of no choice for United Power. And I mean that in that I love transmission. I love big power projects. Been involved in many in my career. But the reality of our pending departure from our current power supplier really led us to looking at those projects, those generating units that are within our footprint, and how can we best manage our system at lowest cost with high reliability for our members. So when we thought about how we are going to interact as an independent cooperative, no longer tied to our power supplier, it became pretty obvious that having supply within our footprint has a bunch of advantages. For example, we've committed to more than 100 megawatts of battery storage, and we're going to put those batteries not in one big 100 megawatt lump, so to speak. We're going to have 8-10 megawatt projects spread out at our substations. We're looking at acquiring power from several local renewable projects. We're also blessed with 5,300 oil and gas wells in our service territory. There are several gas plants. So it's got really three advantages. Number one, it's close and I can control it. As I said earlier, in terms of transmission being built, I'm fully supportive. I'm a big iron guy. I love transmission. I love big power plants. But that's just not the reality. Then you also take a look at sort of the next level. Electricity is being hyper-localized on its own. We have more than 11,000 solar rooftops out of our 110,000 meters. We have 250 batteries that are out at members' homes. So the system is already hyper-localizing. The third issue, third opportunity really, is if I can keep generation in my footprint, it keeps tax dollars in my communities, I have more control, and I don't have to hit the transmission system. And that's really important. As transmission becomes scarce until all these new projects come on, what can I do to lower cost? I can do that by not jumping onto the transmission system. And that's really, in a way, it's a back to the future model. This industry started 125 years ago with local, hyper-localized grids that were then connected into transmission. And again, I love transmission, but I truly believe we may be entering a world where transmission becomes the last resort and not the first resort.
And you kind of answered this next question, but when did United Power begin pursuing this hyper-localization model?
About a year and a half ago, actually a little more. Yeah, about a year and a half ago, when two things happened. One is in our cooperative roadmap, when we decided that we're going to have to go out on our own. And at the same time, when we notified our power supplier that we will be leaving. So in putting out RFPs, looking for power supply, we found a number of local options. And that really just sort of tied into this world, as I said, where the system's being hyper-localized already. I mean, people are they're making decisions every single day, investing their own money in solar panels. They're investing their own money in batteries and electric vehicles and all of those things. We have many of our commercial members, our industrial members, putting their own generation in, and we want to link all of that together.
And how does the hyper-localization model impact United Power's procurement strategy? Is it specifically seeking local projects for its RFPs?
Our preference is clearly local projects. As I said, from a reliability standpoint, a security standpoint, if I don't have to get on the transmission system, and if I can keep revenue in my communities through tax dollars, that's really a good thing.
And do you think that other cooperatives, other locations will also adopt the hyperlocalization model as a way to combat the slow interconnection queues?
Absolutely. If you look at it, virtually everything we deal with in modern society, it's hyperlocalization, right? We've moved to cell phones. In the early days of computers, we plugged into the equivalent of transmission, right? We plugged into the wall, and then that went somewhere mysterious. Like today, we're operating on a much more local model. And I don't believe it's just cooperatives. I think more and more utilities are going to look at this, and whether it's combating the slow interconnection queue or trying to do what you can to keep the power source close, again, it relieves the pressure on the transmission system and presents more opportunities for reliability and resilience. I think it's the wave of the future.
And I know Colorado is going to have SPP kind of step in 2026. And so how will an RTO or an ISO help move in more transmission projects?
Well, the good news about an RTO ISO model is that there's great transparency as to the process for constructing transmission and a fallback position in terms of getting the financing that I talked about. The RTO can lay out the requirements for the lines. It opens up more opportunity for folks to see where they should be built and really provides a financing mechanism, right? Because the whole concept of a market or an RTO, it really is to, number one, focus on reliability, but number two, to spread the cost. And because transmission is costly, both in terms of time and dollars and the effort it takes to cross multiple states, there is a backstop with having an RTO because it really adds some clarity.
And with SPP coming into Colorado in 2026, how will that impact United Power's hyper-localization model? Will it decrease it? Will the hyper-localization model continue? How do you see it impacting this?
It's absolutely a dream come true for hyper-localized models. And the reason I say that is FERC Order 2222 really encourages distribution utilities to interact with the market. And once I could manage and control my own business, which we're going to do becoming a DSO, distribution system operator, it'll give me the opportunity to buy and sell and trade into the market. We're excited about it coming. SPP has done a great job from what I can see, to support a variety of participants in a marketplace. My own experience during my days at WAPA, SPP saves significant amount of money for our utility customers. And I believe that the future is going to be a hyper-localized model connected through the market, meaning that communities, whether they're a co-op or an IOU, have the opportunity to buy and sell through the marketplace.
Excellent. Thank you. And then my last question for you, are there any updates on United Power's exit from Tri-State?
We're working diligently to make this exit happen in roughly a little over 6 months from now. So we signed up power supply. We submitted our transmission requirements and our filling out our dance card, so to speak, with power supply. We're excited about it. We are all anxiously awaiting the final ruling from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And we're moving ahead and excited about the new future for the members of United Power.
Excellent. Mark, thank you again for joining us on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.